It's black and white, but it's there. He fast-forwards through the days in question. Morgan is there, or who I assume is Morgan. She's a little older than me, with shorter, wavier dark hair. She's alone, and obviously very pregnant. She's walking around the house packing for the most part. There's no sound, but she appears to be whistling. That is, until she isn't alone anymore. Morgan jumps back in surprise, but whoever she's surprised to see is off camera. Nine tries to pick up another angle, but the feed suddenly goes blank. Where did it go? I ask, needing to know more about this mysterious person.
It must have been washed out, Nine says, slamming a few keys. I'll try and recover.
After prying open a few internet doors that were never meant to be opened, the screen flashes with an image, but it's hard to see what's on it because it's flickering on and off.
That's all that's left of it, Nine says. Whoever cleaned house knew what they were doing. That's for fucking sure.
Can you freeze it? I ask, leaning over his shoulder. Nine presses a few keys and the image freezes. My stomach flips and I cover my mouth. It's the video from the still Smoke had showed me.
Holy fucking shit, Nine whispers,
his eyes as wide as the computer screen. The image is in black and white and I'm glad, because I can't imagine how it would look in color if it's making me want to fucking vomit now.
I can't look at this anymore, I say, as another thought has the burning sauce threatening to come back up from the back of my throat.
Do you think, Smoke?
I don't know, Nine says. I know some sick fuckers, but this...
Nine leans into his screen.
Wait, look.
In the corner of the frame, walking away from the bloody scene, is a man.
I'm going to zoom in.
The face of the man is blurry, but he's too small to be Smoke. I let out a breath I didn't know I was holding. So all we can make out is that the man is wearing an old-fashioned white hat with some sort of black ribbon or stripe around it above the brim, I say. I was hoping this would give me some insight into what Smoke's hiding from me, but all it's done is make me ask more questions.
No, there's more, Nine says, pointing to what the man's carrying in his hands. Holy shit, I say.
Nine's right. There is more. There's so much fucking more. Chapter 34. Frankie. Nine saves the image on a mini zip drive, and I hide it until I decide how I can use it to help my cause. Nine isn't going to tell anyone, at least not yet, because then it'll be found out that he was helping me. Nine eats his pasta slathered in sauce, while I opt for a little melted butter over mine in fear I'll burn away my insides in a few swallows. The weather is beautiful. It obviously isn't aware that it's not supposed to be under the circumstances. It's odd to think that despite if I'm here or if I'm not, everything will still go on without me. Good weather, bad, droughts, storms. None of that will happen today, though. Today is nothing but clear blue skies and a balmy 90 degrees. I have another week. One more week to enjoy this place and this mess I've made. I have no clue where Smoke is, but I know he's around somewhere because I heard his bike outside. I want to take advantage of the beautiful day. So I rummage through the big storage container of clothes and pull out the only bathing suit I can find. Along with everything else in the box, it's new, with the tags still attached. It's a simple triangle top with string ties at the back and neck, with matching low-slung bottoms and tied sides. It's a size too small, so my ass cheeks hang out the bottom, as do the bottom swell of my breasts. But it's not like I'm going anywhere in public. So I decide to wear it anyway. I tie my hair up and go outside, taking a towel with me with one of the romance novels I found. I set the towel down in the middle of the front lawn, and not a second passes before the warden is here, nudging my book with his wet nose.
Okay, okay, I laugh, taking the tennis ball from his mouth and tossing it across the yard.
After a few minutes, the warden tires and lays down, content to chew on his ball instead of chase it. I do the same and pat his head with one hand while lying on my stomach and holding up my book with the other.
Mind if I join you? Nine asks.
I look up to find him shirtless, a big goofy grin on his face. I sit up and put down my book.
I thought you left.
In a few. I just wanted to give you something first.
What's that? I ask.
His hands come around from behind his back, and before I know what's happening, he's spraying me with cold water from a hose. The warden barks, and I yelp in surprise, then spend the next 10 minutes trying to take the hose from him to get him back. When we're all out of breath, we collapse onto the towel and I dry my hands, picking back up my now somewhat soggy book. Nine is on his back, with his hands behind his head, and his closed eyes to the sky. And I'm next to him on my stomach again, with my feet in the air.
I hope things work out for you, Nine says, sitting up.
I hope they do, too, I say.
I gotta be going, he says, surprising me when he leans in to kiss me.
I'm not sure if he's aiming for my cheek or my lips, but it lands on the corner of my mouth.
I mean it. I really hope they work out for you. Who knows? Maybe we'll run into one another one day.
Maybe, I say. Maybe not. My heart sinks as Nine leaves. It was nice to have someone to talk to. He pulls out of the driveway and I pick up my book again. I'm at a really good part where the hero and the heroine finally kiss, when a familiar shadow is cast over my entire body.
Smoke.
I turn to confront him about blocking my light, when I'm met with his stone gaze.
Shit, I mutter to myself. His jaw ticks.
What's going? I'm lifted off the ground and tossed over Smoke's shoulder. What are you doing? I ask, kicking and yelling against his hard body.
I should break his fucking neck.
He seethes. Whose neck? I shriek. Smoke doesn't answer. He doesn't even stop until we're back in the bedroom. He throws me down on the mattress and cuffs my hand to the headboard.
What the hell?
I yelp. What's this for?
I have to go out for a while, and I can't take you with me.
He grates through his teeth. He's angry with me, although I have no clue why.
I didn't go outside the property line or anything.
I tell him, you don't have to cuff me.
Yes, I do. He argues, I should do a lot fucking more than cuff you.
He looks as if he's trying to gain control over himself, but he's losing.
I don't understand. Why?
I don't get a chance to finish my question, because he's already gone. The bedroom door is left partially open. I hear the front door slam shut, and his bike engine roar to life. I'm so wound up, I can't think straight. What the hell just happened? What did I do? All signs point to him being jealous, but that isn't possible. He doesn't want me. He's made that clear. He can't be mad that Nine kissed me, even if it was just a friendly kiss.
Could he be?
I growl out my frustrations. I'm wound up tight. I'm angry and tired and so frustrated I could scream. I can't get to him, at least not anywhere it counts. The only thing I seem to do is make him angry. Maybe I should show him the drive. Maybe it will mean something to him, enough to let him set me free. Or maybe not. I sigh and try to calm my erratic heart and racing mind, but as I lay here, I find myself pressing my thighs together to calm the growing ache between my legs. I've read almost every romance novel in the house, and nothing compares to the few minutes I spent on Smoke's lap a few days ago before he pushed me off. For now, I tell myself it's the novels that started this feeling in me, this pent-up need to feel more, to feel something. With my one free hand,
I untie my bathing suit top. I hesitate, but only for a moment. I've touched myself before, but have never found it to be all that satisfying. Most of the time, after I came, I wanted more, not less. But with my time on Earth limited, and no other way to try and quiet the pulsing between my thighs, I finish untying my top and toss it to the side, and then my bottom. I lie down on the bed completely naked. My feet are flat on the mattress. I close my eyes and squeeze my nipple, making it pebble in mere seconds. I bite my lip and move my hand to the other nipple, running my flattened palm over the top several times. I'm wet now, and I move to touch myself between my legs, snaking my hand down my body. I want to pretend this is real, that it's someone else's hand touching me. Immediately, I picture smoke, then shake my head and decide on Duke instead. I remember his kisses, his good looks. It's working until my fingertips reach my clit. Then the image switches from blonde curls and goofy grins to dark eyes and rough hands, lips that were made for sin, a body so perfect I never knew something like him ever existed. I remember the way it felt to be on his lap, the way he used my hips to rub myself against his hard shaft through his jeans. I circle my clit with my fingers, using my own wetness to glide over and over it again and again. I lift my hips off the bed and imagine that it went further, that his jeans made it to the floor, that he flipped me over, sucked on my nipples while he fucked me with his fingers. I come before I can even make it further with my daydream, and when I do, it's hard, so hard. It's so wrong, but I don't care. I just care about this feeling coursing through me like a stampede. I'm screaming out into the otherwise quiet house. It's a wild cry, desperate, loud, and unforgiving. And I've never experienced an orgasm this strong before, this unpredictable. My hand is still between my spread legs as I ride out the wave of pleasure. I shiver from the sensation of my hard nipples against the breeze coming through the window. I'm coming down, my mouth open in ecstasy, my fingers still lazily circling my clit. Smoke's name is still echoing through the house when my head falls to the side and my eyes open. There, standing in the doorway, is Smoke.
Chapter 35. Smoke. What in the holy fuck? What I see before me has me mesmerized. Frankie, cuffed to the bed. That much I expected to find. It's what I didn't expect that has my throat dry and my fingers twitching by my side. She's naked. She's naked, and she's touching herself. It's the most erotic thing I've ever seen. It's both pleasure and pain, heaven and hell, which sums up just about everything when it comes to Frankie Hellburn. This isn't what I expected when I came back. My mouth is dry and I'm more turned on than I've ever been in my life. I can't look away. Not now. Not fucking ever. Not anymore. "You're back," she whispers. Her cheeks are pink and her eyes look like she's just shot up with heroin. She's unfocused, high on lust. My cock throbs painfully behind my jeans and I can't take it any longer. "I'm back," I say, shrugging off my cut and pulling my shirt over my head. I lay them on the dresser and walk over to the bed. I place my hand on her knee and push it down onto the bed, spreading her wide so I can see how wet and pink she is. "Fucking beautiful," I murmur. Her thighs are slick and glistening. "You were thinking about me," I say on a rasp, hearing the hunger in my own voice. I don't attempt to hide it. I'm past that now. So fucking far past it. She nods, her fingers trailing from her lips to her breasts, where she lazily pinches her nipple, never taking her eyes from mine. "Fuck, Frankie," I take off my boots and socks, dropping them to the floor. I can't stop this anymore, I say. I mean it. I'm powerless against this slight little thing. She lifts her hips off the bed, silently begging me for something I can no longer pretend I don't want to give her. She whimpers, and the sound is like a stroke to my cock. My balls tighten. I thought you'd left, she says on a breathy whisper, her eyes raking over my naked chest, then dipping lower as I take off my jeans and kick them aside. I did leave. I didn't like that little shit touching you. Kissing you, I say, growing angry all over again. I watch her watch me. She doesn't react to my anger. Instead, she smiles and bites her bottom lip. There's no way this was a show meant for me to walk in on. I parked my bike at Zelda's and then walked back through the field. She couldn't have heard me coming, and there was no faking an orgasm like that. Why did you leave? She asks. Because I'm stupid. Because I'm losing sight of what's important. Because I can't make decisions or think of anything else when you're walking around in that little black bikini that barely fits you. That same little black bikini that's now pushed up over her tits. Her nipples hard and she's got her knees spread wide. When she came with my name on her lips, I had to hold on to the fucking doorway for support. It was fucking beautiful. She is fucking beautiful. I want her. I've wanted her since the second I saw her face for the first time. But now, coming with my name screamed from her lips, I know she wants me. I'm not waiting. Not anymore. Fuck the consequences. I can't focus on anything else. I need to be inside her more than I need to breathe. Fuck everything and everyone. Nothing is coming between us now, except for Frankie, who I will be making come. Over and over again. I love controlling her, bending her to my will, demonstrating that I'm the one in charge. But even to my own surprise, what I love even more is when she fights back. When she looks as if she's about to breathe fire, her perfect tits heaving up and down with her heavy breaths. When she glares at me with all the defiance in the fucking world, it makes my cock rock hard. But it's more than that. It's her strength combined with her vulnerability. It's her loyalty to her shitbag old man. Frankie holds more power in her eyes than I can wield in this entire lifetime. She doesn't even know it. As I stare at her, I realize those eyes aren't just some weird yellow and orange color. They're flames. Flames I don't want to tame. Not anymore. I want us to stand in the fire and watch the world burn. Together.
Frankie. Smoke's eyes are so heavily hidden with lust that they're reduced to slits with gleaming orbs peeking out from underneath. He places a knee on the bed, and then the other, spreading my knees to the mattress as wide as they will go, and covering my body with his, positioning himself between my legs. He pushes down his black boxer briefs over his perfectly rounded ass cheeks. They look like something from a sculpture. Tattoos cover his legs and continue all the way up to his neck, but his ass is surprisingly tattoo-free. I blush. He can probably see it if my face wasn't already as pink as I know it is, because I can feel the heat rising in my neck and face as he places his hands on both sides of my head. I lift my hips again, and when my clit makes contact with his hardness, we both moan out loud. I told myself I was pretending to want him before, that my reaction to him was just nature, biology. It was the biggest lie I've ever told, even if it was only to myself. Because this thing between us, this electrical charge that sparks every time we're in the same room, there isn't anything usual about it. I want Smoke. There's no denying it. Not when it's him I imagined was touching me when I came. Not when I can't fucking breathe, because I don't want to do anything that might interfere with feeling his every touch. If Smoke was holding back from me before, he isn't anymore. The look in his eyes is downright wicked. His pupils are huge, His biceps and shoulders flex as he holds his arms on both sides of me. He looks down at me and rubs a thumb over my lip. I close my eyes and lean into his touch. He growls deep within his throat, then covers my lips with his. He doesn't bother uncuffing me. His hand travels down between my legs, and he circles my clit over and over again, bringing me right back to the brink, then stopping. He does it again and again, while never taking his lips from mine. I'm dizzy, and my heart's slamming in my chest, and my stomach is so tight it's about to burst at any moment. His tongue dances with mine, molding together, synchronizing perfectly yet chaotically. Please, I beg against his mouth between kisses and nips. His lips move to my neck, and he sucks and licks the skin behind my ear, and I feel it everywhere. Wetness is pooled between my legs. The sheets underneath me are soaked. Please, I beg again, as he goes lower and sucks a nipple into his mouth. I cry out, loudly, not caring who hears or what happens. I need to. I trail off, not remembering anything I was saying, when one long finger enters me, stroking my inner wall. I'm shaking, trembling. I'm on the verge of full-on convulsing when he stops. When you come, it will be wrapped around my cock. I nod, because it's all the answer I can give as he rocks his hips, rubbing his shaft over my clit again and again until I'm seeing stars. It's pure fucking amazing torture. A pleasurable agony. I look down between us. His erection is massive, thick and long with a dark purple tip, glistening with moisture. You're going to break me, I say against his lips. He smirks. Yes, I am. Smoke kisses me again. It's deeper, more frantic this time. Our tongues start the torturous dance once more when his shaft leaves my clit long enough to line himself with my entrance. He lifts my hips up off the mattress and surges forward into me on a strangled roar. I grimace. The pain is sharper than glass. I'm breaking. I'm being split in half. It's only fair, since you've already broken me. He reaches between us and rubs my clit while he thrusts into me, ignoring my cries of pain until they turn into cries of pleasure. He moves his lips from my neck to my ear, back to my lips, and down to my nipple. He uses his hands to guide my hips up to meet his thrusts, allowing him to go deeper each time, until I'm so full of smoke, he's all I can feel, all I can see, all I can think about. I don't know if it's the room shaking or me when the eruption starts from low in my stomach and spreads out like the fallout from a nuclear bomb. I'm screaming and crying and clawing at his back. I want to hurt him, mark him. I want his flesh under my nails and blood running down his back. I need to mark him, scar him, remind him of me and this and us for as long as he lives. Nothing outside the sound of the slapping of his skin against mine or the way he moans my name matters. Not now. Not when his lips are on my skin and he's deep inside my body. The orgasm is so hard and rough and painful that I'm crying. Genuine tears are rolling down my face as Smoke's pace quickens and he slams into me. His own orgasm, the thickening of his cock inside me, has another wave of pleasure crashing into this one like two hurricanes in the ocean. Smoke! I cry out. Open your fucking eyes, Smoke demands, his voice a distant echo in my lust-riddled mind. But I hear him. And because I'm all out of defiance when it comes to my body and Smoke's control over it, I do as I'm told. He holds my face, dropping his forehead to mine, and keeps his eyes locked with mine as his thrusts become wilder. It's rough and hard, and everything I never knew I wanted it to be. Frankie, oh fuck, Frankie. He releases everything he has inside me.
I'm still convulsing around him, tightening my internal grip like a vise until he sags against me. We're both panting for air. Smoke wraps an arm around me as he catches his breath. My brain is muddled. I'm high on lust and smoke. I was wrong about him not wanting me, about my desire for him. But I was right about one thing. There was no doubt about it. Smoke broke me. Chapter 36. Frankie. I wake up, and I'm alone. I throw on one of Smoke's t-shirts and my Converse and look outside. At first I don't see anything, until I spot a light in the far end of the yard up by the main prison. I walk toward it, and I find Smoke, staring down at the ground. He doesn't look up as I approach. My eyes follow to where Smoke's staring blankly down at two large stones on top of one large overgrown mound of dirt on the otherwise flat land. Those aren't rocks. They're headstones. I have so many questions. You can ask, Smoke says, reading my mind. I think for a second it could be a trap of some sort, but I ask anyway. My curiosity is getting the better of me. Who is buried here? My parents. Who buried them here? I ask, dreading the answer. He looks up slowly. Our eyes meet. I did. My parents were really young. Too fucking young. Teenagers, runaways. They were both stuck in the cycle of partying and drugs when I came along. We'd move around from couch to garage to abandoned building. We were homeless for the most part. They were good parents when they weren't fucked up, from what I can remember anyway. What happened to them? They always went to this house, this drifter who lived in one of the outhouses around this prison. I went to the house to find them after I woke up in a prison cell alone. They weren't there. No one was. I hated that house, hated what the things in there were doing to them. So I crawled on my hands and knees under the crawl space. I cut the gas line and pushed it up into the main water pipe and lit a match. I almost didn't make it back out. My pants snagged on a nail. I did tear away the fabric to get free. The force from the blast sent me sailing into a tree. I dislocated my shoulder, broke my arm, but I barely felt the pain. All I felt walking back to the prison cell was happiness. But then, they never came back. They were in the house, weren't they? I asked. He nods. They were just too fucked up to answer the door. I buried what was left of their belongings here. It wasn't much, just some clothes and shit. The worst part was, after the initial shock faded, I felt relieved. I no longer had to wonder if they were coming back. They weren't. I made the decisions from then on out. I was happier because they were dead. I'm so sorry. Why? Because I accidentally killed my parents? Don't. I'm not. I never was. You were a child. You shouldn't feel bad. You were 8 years old. You've had no nurturing or supervision. It's not your fault. There's nothing to feel bad about. You don't know nothing about it, Smoke snaps. I push against his arm. No? After my mother died, my father checked out on me. He worked in the basement, and for years I would only see him when he was giving me money for groceries. He didn't tell me what to do, but he also never told me what to not do. I was barely out of the toddler stage, but I was raising myself. So don't give me this how-would-you-know bullshit, because I know plenty. Then how did you end up so... Don't you dare say normal. I don't think that word has ever applied to me. A few moments of silence passes between us before I speak again. This is going to sound ridiculous, but I used to pretend my mother was there. I used to pretend she was telling me what to do. I went to bed at 8 p.m. every night,
because I pretended she was giving me a bedtime. I took my baths, I ate my vegetables, all because I imagined I had a mother who wanted the best for me.
What about when she was alive?
I don't know how she was when she was alive. I don't remember her. I tried and tried and tried to remember her. I'd stare at her picture in the hallway every day, trying to remember one thing, a word, a look, even a yell or scold. But nothing. The only mother I know is the mother from my imagination. So you see, just like you, I raised myself.
But we still ended up very different people.
Yes, I agreed. You're on one side of the gun, and I'm on the other. Smoke looks back down at the grave. For a nanosecond, I feel the heat of his palm on my lower back before he drops it, flexing his fingers and cracking the knuckles instead. Is he trying to comfort me, or seeking comfort of his own? I'm not sure why the sudden confession from Smoke, or why he shared this part of his life with me, but I'm very aware that there's more to him than I've realized. There's only one reason why he's choosing to be personal with me now, and it's not a good one.
You're taking me to him, aren't you?
I ask, already knowing the answer.
I don't know.
There's no emotion in his voice.
First thing in the morning.
I take a step back and suck in a ragged breath. Well, thank you for your honesty, Smoke, that you can keep your stories to yourself. I almost trip on a rock. Smoke looks like he's about to help steady me, but stops himself as I quickly recover. But you can keep your stories to yourself. I've never been a big fan of consolation prizes. My throat tightens as I turn and jog back to the house, with hot tears streaming down my face and disappointment burning in my heart.
I told you nothing was going to change.
I hear him call out. I stop and turn back around. I march right up to him and stab my index finger into his chest. But everything has already changed.
I told you I don't have no choice.
You always have a choice.
Not always. Not in this fucking case.
Yes, you do. You just won't choose me.
Chapter 37. Smoke. It may be hard to believe since you think the world revolves around you, but as much as you want to make this all about you, it's not. I yell to Frankie, hot on her heels. Then who is it about? She asks, spinning around to face me. We're in the kitchen. Her back is against the counter. Because the last time I checked, I'm the only one here being held against her will. So tell me, Smoke, who the hell could this all be about? It's about my kid, I blurt. Frankie's jaw drops open. She doesn't speak. Just stares at me in disbelief. She's squinting at me as if she can't quite see me, even though I'm right in front of her. What? She finally asks in a whisper. It was the last shit in the world I want to tell anyone, never mind Frankie, but I can't keep it from her anymore. The hurt in her eyes is strangling me from the inside. I'm twisted up. Telling her won't change anything, but at least maybe it can change the look of betrayal I've put there. The world has stopped spinning. It's just me and this beautiful, angry girl staring at one another like we're about to either fuck or claw each other's eyes out. Maybe both. Who can blame us? We're supposed to be on opposite sides, but things have changed. The only side I want to be on is hers.
Your what?
She asks again, louder this time, as if maybe she didn't hear me correctly, although from the surprised look on her face, the way her eyebrows unfurrow, I know she has. I meet her in the middle of the kitchen and lift her up by the waist, propping her up on the counter. I maneuver myself between her legs for two reasons. One, because I need to be touching her while I tell her what I'm about to tell her. And two, because I need to keep her in place so she won't run away on me again. I need her to stay and listen to every word I'm about to say. It's that fucking important. Morgan, I start. She was a friend of mine. Well, I guess more than a friend. She was in the business, too. Mostly tech stuff. Occasionally, she helped me out. She didn't love me. I didn't love her. But we trusted each other. I cringe when I come to the part of the story I've never said out loud before. Keep going, Frankie urges me on. I clear my throat. I was away working clear across the country for several months. I go dark when I'm working certain jobs. Dark? No phone, no communication at all. She nods against my chest and I cradle the back of her head with my hand, threaded my fingers through her hair. When I got back, I went to see Morgan, but she wasn't at her house, so I went to this cabin I kept. She had a key, so when I saw the light on, I figured she was there. I feel my fingers tighten around Frankie's hair as the images of what I found in the house flash through my brain like a twisted picture show. And she was. But she wasn't alive, Frankie says. I nod slowly. No, she wasn't. Far from it. There was nothing in her house but smeared blood. More blood than I had ever seen, and I've seen my fair share. I had to look closer to realize what had really happened. I nod and wrap my arms around her waist and pull her to the edge of the counter so I can press her soft body against me. I think she's going to fight me, but she sighs into my chest instead. I rest my chin on the top of her head and breathe her in. What really happened? Frankie asks. Morgan. She was pregnant. I didn't know. We hadn't spoken in months. I was away. That's why there was so much blood. She was hacked to pieces. Every inch of her.
Oh my God, Frankie gasps. Why? Why on earth would someone do that?
She's sobbing against my chest. I'm now comforting her. Holding her. I don't tell her it happened because the world is an evil place, because I've committed my fair share of my evil. I don't tell her it's my fault for getting close to her, and that it's all my fault. Even though it is.
The baby was your baby, wasn't it?
I nod again, unable to say the words out loud. I reach into my wallet and hand Frankie the blood-soaked letter I found in Morgan's house under her body. Frankie unfolds it slowly like it's something delicate that can be broken easily and not a creased piece of torn notebook paper. Her lips move as she reads it to herself. I don't even have to carry it with me anymore. I've read it 1,000 times. I know exactly what it says, having memorized every word.
You. I don't know why I'm writing this, since I expect you back soon. I guess I'm writing it more to myself, since I'll probably see you before I can give this to you. But just in case I can't find the words, then this will be my backup. You should know that I look like I've swallowed the entire Golden West Buffet, but I love it. I love being pregnant. Truth is that I've always wanted to be a mum. For the first time in a long time, I'm excited about what the future will bring, and this child of ours is the best reason I could ever have to start a new life. I'm leaving this life. I'm going someplace safe where I can raise this most beautiful and welcome mistake. I've got some money saved. I'm going to leave the state and buy a house somewhere in the suburbs, on a tree-lined street in a town with more than one stoplight. Who knows? Maybe I'll be one of those suburban mums who wears tennis skirts every day, but don't play a lick of tennis. You know, the kind who brag about the tech in their new minivans and who complain about the misspelling of their names on their coffee cups at Starbucks. Of course, mine will be a teacup. I am British, after all. In all seriousness, I find myself very ready for this new adventure. A new challenge. You know me. I can do just fine on my own. I've been doing it my entire life. However, you can be a part of this if you want. I don't expect or want us to be an actual couple. You and I are far too realistic for something like that. But we can be good friends and attempt to be good parents. At the very least, better than either of us had. Although that bar has been set pretty low as it is. Whatever you decide is fine with me. Just know that there is no halfway. Not with this. I won't risk it. I can't. You've got to be out of the life to be in our lives. I'll give you some time to think about it. It's only fair since I've had months to ponder all of this, and you're just now finding out. You're probably still doing that angry eyebrow thing you do when you're thinking over something. I'm quite sure of it. Don't give yourself wrinkles, old man. If you decide to come with us, I'm sure the two of us will give you our own fair share. Me.
Frankie. Holy shit, I say, piecing together the connection between the security video Nine and I found and the story Smoke is telling me. My heart is breaking for him. For Morgan. This right here, Smoke says, taking the letter from my hands and folding it back up. He tucks it into his back pocket. It's why nothing changes. I still don't understand the connection. What does this letter have to do with me, with my father? Smoke walks over to his duffel bag and pulls out a photo, which he pushes into my hands. It's a black and white still image from the same bloody surveillance footage Nine and I found. Same date and timestamp in the upper right corner. Oh my fucking God, I gasp, holding my hand over my mouth. I don't have to pretend to be shocked, even though I've seen it before. It's just as gruesome now as it was the first time. I think I'm going to be sick, I say, holding my churning stomach. Your old man didn't just steal from Griff. He stole from me. Smoke points to the corner of the image. This picture is different than the one I found with Nine. The background is the same. The body is the same. The blood is the same. But the man in this image is a very different man than the one from the video. There's no hat with black stripe. It's a different man altogether. Someone had tampered with the image. One of them is fake. And when I recognize the man in the image, I know immediately which one. I begin to hyperventilate. My chest feels like someone's sitting on it. No, no, it can't be, I start to say. Yes, it can, Smoke argues, slamming his hand down on the counter. I understand now why Smoke is doing this, why I'm here, what he wants out of all this. Revenge. Because the man in the photo isn't just vaguely familiar, he's very familiar. He's my father.
Chapter 38. Smoke. Frankie looks up at me with tear-stained cheeks. Don't cry. That bastard doesn't deserve your tears, I say.
I'm not crying for him, she sniffles.
I see my reflection in her glassy eyes.
I'm crying for you.
I'm done. Dead. I've been dealt a death blow. Something I can never recover from. My stomach lurches and my breath leaves my body. I'm crying for you. I don't remember the last time someone has cried for me instead of because of me. I don't like the way it feels in my chest. Tight. Uncomfortable. I'm suddenly feeling very claustrophobic in my own damn skin. I don't give a second thought to wiping away Frankie's tears with my thumbs, resting my hands on either side of her face. I pause for a moment, enjoying the way my tattooed hands look against her creamy, clear skin. The slope of her long, slender neck. The feel of her quickening pulse against my palm.
Ask me again, she says, drying her tears with her hands.
Ask you what?
Ask me to tell you where my father is.
I'm frozen in shock, but she's serious. Frankie? Where's your father? I ask, cautiously. Frankie is silent while my heart hammers in my chest. She looks to her hands, and then up to me.
Okay, she whispers.
Okay, what? She straightens her shoulders and looks me in the eyes.
Okay, I'll take you to him. I'll take you to my father.
Chapter 39. Smoke. Silence. It used to be something I enjoyed. something I craved. I'd sit alone in a room somewhere hours after the world had gone asleep and just breathe. For hours. I'd just be. It had always been enough for me. Until now. Until I find myself in the van with Frankie in the passenger seat. She's staring out the window. There hasn't been a word spoken between us in over 2 hours. Her plump lips are turned down in a frown. Her eyes shine with unshed tears. I don't know what the fuck it is she has to tell me, or why she's decided now to take me to her old man, but I know she's wrestling with something big. I've waited this long to get Frank Hellburn. I can wait a few minutes longer. Even so, the trip is taking forever. Every bump under the tires is jarring. Every beeping horn in the distance sounds like a freight train descending upon us. We arrive at the townhouse under the cloak of night, the same house I watched Frankie go in and out of from afar for weeks. I get out and slam the door. I stand in front of the van and wait. Frankie doesn't follow. "You coming?" I ask, knocking on the passenger door. After a few seconds, it opens and Frankie slides down from the seat. "Aren't you going to ask me why we're here?" she asks, straightening her shirt. She looks up at the dark townhouse. Her eyebrows crinkle like she's looking it over for the first time. "No," I answer. "Because I know you're going to tell me. That's why we are here, right? It's truth time." I hold my hand out to her. Frankie pauses, looking between my face and my hand. "Come on, Hellion," I say, wiggling my fingers. She puts her hand in mine. It's truth time.
Chapter 40. Frankie. "Why now?" Smoke asks. I open the front door and flick on the light, but nothing happens. Probably because I didn't pay the power bill last month.
"Why do you suddenly trust me to tell you whatever it is you've been hiding now?"
"You'll see soon enough," I say. Smoke darts back to the van and grabs a flashlight. He runs back, powering it on. He follows me into the dark house, lighting the way over to the door leading to the basement. I reach around and feel the wall under the sloped ceiling until I find the dial for the generator. I turn it, and after a few seconds a rumble starts. Soon after, the lights in the basement flicker and blink until they're fully on. The microwave button beeps with the reminder to set the clock. And for once, I don't jump out of my own skin. Seems a little superfluous at this point. We get to the bottom of the stairs. Smoke sets down the flashlight and takes in the sight before him. The computers in the center of the room come alive. Several small fans underneath start spinning to keep it all from overheating in what sounds like a collective roar. "I call it the monster," I explain as Smoke steps into the room. He stops to stare at the 8 large monitors, 4 on the long desk and 4 mounted above on pipes hanging from the ceiling.
"You mean your old man called it the monster," Smoke says, examining my life's work.
He turns to me.
"I thought you said you were taking me to him."
I take a deep breath and stand between him and my life's work. "I did take you to him."
"Explain,"
Smoke says, crossing his arms over his chest. His vein is pulsing again, and I know it's a sign of his temper growing and his patience shortening.
"'Cause I don't see anyone here but me and you, and a bunch of computers he used to steal money from Griff."
I sit down at my desk like a pianist at his instrument. I run my fingertips lovingly over the keys. I close my eyes and take a deep breath. My fingers play the keyboard with practiced efficiency. The monitors flash screen after screen. Smoke stands behind me and watches.
"Holy shit,"
he whispers. "You already know my father was a hacker. Funny thing is, he always told me he worked for the government. I later on found out it was all a lie. He was laundering money, but he wasn't just laundering money. He was transferring funds for human traffickers, taking the money from the people buying sex slaves and sending it to the people selling sex slaves. I find my rhythm and glance up at the screens at the visual music I'm creating. He spent his whole useless life helping those who buy and sell people, hiding their monetary transactions so they wouldn't get caught. He was the real monster. This? I wave my hands at the computer system I spent years perfecting. Is my monster.
What the fuck?
Smoke says. I spin around in my chair and he looks from me to the screens, still flashing.
Frankie, you said you were taking me to your old man.
He growls. And I said I did, I argue. Smoke looks around.
Then where the fuck is he?
He asks between gritted teeth.
Don't fucking toy with me.
He's over there. I point to the darkened corner of the basement, where only the bottom of a large blue rectangular freezer can be seen peeking out from under a blue roof tarp. Smoke rips the tarp away. He turns and storms over to me, his heavy feet thudding against the cement floor. He's furious and aggressive and fucking beautiful all at the same time. He grabs my chair, hands on both of the armrests, and leans in, his face in mine. I see the anger burning in his dark eyes, but I also see hurt. So much hurt my chest pangs, despite the position I'm in with my feet dangling above the floor. He thinks I've betrayed him.
Where?
He snarls. I don't take my eyes off his. My father. Frank Hellburn is there. He's in the cooler. Smoke pushes off the chair and stands.
What?
I meet his eyes. He's in the cooler. He's dead. My father's dead. He's been dead.
Smoke. My ears are fucking ringing. Dead. The motherfucker I've been looking for all this time is dead.
5 years ago,
she continues to explain as I cross the room to the corner where the dusty blue cooler sits catty-corner underneath a section of dropped ceiling. I pull on the padlock, but it doesn't budge. I look around and spot a pair of bolt cutters hanging from the wall. I grab them, snapping the lock off after several blood vessel bursting tries. I need to see for myself that the bastard is dead. I can't decide if I'm happy or pissed off I didn't get a chance to do it myself, but I'll work that out later. The lid of the cooler doesn't move when I try to raise it. I bend at the knees to use my back, and it finally gives. The ice lining the lid breaks off and shatters to the floor, bouncing around like tiny diamonds as they catch the light from Frankie's monitors. Inside is yet another blue tarp, which I hastily rip to the side, revealing the frozen, open-mouthed corpse of Frank Hellburn. Fuck. For how long? I ask. Frankie walks over and stands beside me, looking down at her dead old man. She stares down at him with so much hatred, I'm surprised the ice doesn't start melting. She looks up and meets my eyes.
5 years.
Chapter 41. Smoke.
Please sit, Frankie pleads.
I shake my head. Truth first. What the fuck is going on here?
Okay.
She sits back down on the chair and her fingers move so fast over the keyboard I can't see her fingers.
I'll start at the beginning if that's okay,
she asks without looking back at me. It's so unlike her to ask me before she does something. I'm not sure if I love it or hate it. She sees me nod in the reflection on one of the screens. She inhales a shaky breath.
I never saw my father much, she starts, but you know that already.
Keep going, I urge her on. She's pulling up security feed for Astro, and I recognize it as a company that does high-end systems for, well, people like me.
I spent my time in the house, and my father spent his down here. He ate down here. He had a cot down here that he slept on most nights. I always thought he was just a really hard worker. He told me he designed websites for the government.
She chuckled and looked up at the elaborate computer screen.
I used to show my friends at school the White House website and brag that my father was the one who built it. She glanced up at me. The only meaningful time we ever spent together was when he was showing me how to use computers.
I could type before I could write with a pencil. I could write in code better than I could write my ABCs. Occasionally, he showed me a few tricks. I think he was showing off. It was the only thing he was ever really proud of. That it was all fucking bullshit. Like, what kind of tricks? I ask. Like how to hack into the school mainframe and set off the fire sprinklers on prank day, she says with a laugh. Other tricks I picked up by watching him. I'd sneak down here and sit on the step that was covered the most by the shadows. He never heard me, but I watched him working. I can tell you I never saw a single picture of the White House on any of his screens. Frankie was downright graceful. She barely blinked as she moved one screen to the next, and the fact that she could talk to me while doing it made me realize she was on an entirely different level of smart than the rest of the population. And then one day, she continued, I'd learned enough from watching him and doing my own research that I realized what he was doing. The trafficking. Yeah, the trafficking, she grated. The sounds of the keyboard clicks grew louder as she pounded on them with a lot more pressure than needed. She shakes her head. He was a facilitator, a closer. He was responsible for the deaths of thousands of women around the world. I was so disgusted I didn't eat for weeks. Frankie's fingers slow. I was going to call the cops, but I wanted to confront him about it. So one day, I gathered all my courage and all my evidence against him. I stormed down here ready to be jury and judge, only to find him slumped over his keyboard, dead. How did he die? I ask. Frankie shook her head. He was always really unhealthy. Never slept, ate all the wrong things, chain-smoked 16 hours a day. I think his heart just finally gave out. And you didn't call anyone? There was no one to call. I don't have any other family. And if I would have called the police or coroner or whoever, I wouldn't have been able to do all this. She waved her hand at the monitors, her eyes glassy. She sniffled. So I made a pulley with some chains, hung it from the roof, and shoved him in the freezer so that no one would know of his death and I could live here and pretend to be him. Online, anyway. And that's when I started my work. Which is what? I ask hesitantly. She smiles, beaming with pride. When I realized I could hack my way into the dark web and continue his work, but in a different kind of way, I did. I knew the drop-off points, the method of transport. It was all at my fingertips. So I saved them, Smoke. I stole money from the assholes trading people like stocks on the NASDAQ, and I hired mercenaries to rescue them. Hundreds of them. Hundreds of women who are now back with their families because I stopped it all. Holy shit, I say. Say something else. Something besides holy shit, Frankie says. I'm blown away here. I'm pissed you didn't tell me. I'm surprised. I'm fucking amazed. I'm kind of proud, I say, cupping her face in my hands. No one's ever told me they were proud of me before. Her eyes light up. Assholes. All of them. I thought when you took me that day that it was about the money I stole. I didn't tell you where Frank was and that he was dead because... You lied to me. Yes. Because if I told you the truth, then you would have known it was me who stole the money and...
And I would be dead anyway, I finished for her. She nods.
Because you thought you were looking for Frank Hellburn, but you never were. You were looking for me.
Chapter 42 Frankie. You manipulated me, Smoke says. His proud is turning to pissed off again. Yes, and I'd do it again, I tell him, sticking up my chin. Fuck. Smoke curses, standing from my chair with such force it falls forward onto the ground. You pissed off the wrong people, Frankie. But hopefully I saved the right ones, I defend. I couldn't stand by and not do anything. I stand from my chair and cross my arms over my chest, jutting out my hip. Anyone in my position would have done the same. Smoke scoffs. No, they wouldn't. The people you pissed off wouldn't. I wouldn't. Any decent person in my position would have done the same, I say, staring him down. Decent?